I am most terribly sorry to hear that Michael Winner has died, age 77. But I think he's a good example of how somebody, I suppose, can make their mark. And it was no secret, and I'm sure anybody who's ever dealt with Michael in a media sense will know that, you know, he was a man who liked things done in a very particular way. And I wanted to share sort of three, you know, Michael Winner moments where he's kind of either thrown a strop or been quite the opposite and been sort of the loveliest man going. So it goes something like this. When I was a TalkSport producer, was the first time I was in contact with Michael Winner. He was due to come in and speak on the James Whale show on a Sunday. And I can't remember whether I was at the time the Outpost editor as well, and that I was supposed to be there ordinarily on a Sunday and somebody was covering for me, or whether I was doing some other role and just setting the guests up at that stage. I really can't remember. But we wanted Michael Winner to come in anyway. And he agreed if we made some nominal donation to the Police Memorial Trust, if I remember correctly. And so as he turned up to the TalkSport offices, he rolled up in his Rolls Royce. And he bumped into Mickey Quinn, the excellent Mickey Quinn from Fat Camp, you know, football fame and all that stuff. And I think what it was is, at that point, I'm not sure whether Mickey recognised him or not. He probably did. But I think what it was, so he said, "I'm just coming here to go and talk sport." And he said, "I'm sorry, that sounds like a zippy impression. It's not supposed to." "It's all right." He said, "Unfortunately, I'm a presenter, mate. So ring this number." So Michael Winner threw a world-class strop, got back in his Rolls Royce, and shot off for no other reason than it was an unmanned security desk at the time. And he took the view, if someone wasn't there to meet him, then he wasn't going to bother to appear. And actually, to be fair, although that was a bit stroppy, there was a point of professionalism why somebody wasn't downstairs to meet him. I still to this day don't really know, but as I say, for whatever reason, I wasn't there on the Sunday. The second time, and I was always a bit scared of Michael Winner after that, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think we smoothed that one over by donating £500 to charity, which is fair enough, actually, in a way. But I think the second time that I actually spoke to him, and I was terrified of speaking to him, I'll be honest with you. But I was reporting at this point and broadcasting myself, but I was also current affairs editor. And I can't remember exactly the date, but do you remember the time of the... the Jonathan Ross Saxgate affair with Russell Brand. And we'd had a very good friend of mine, Matthew Norman, who's columnist of the year, I think in 2008 or similar, tremendously witty. He's a very much left of centre columnist, but I mean, he is, you know, he's so incredibly intelligent and everything else, and I like the stuff he has before I knew him. But I, as current affairs editor, wanted to bring Matthew Norman into Talk Sports, and he did some excellent cover for us. But on one of his earlier shows, it was around the time of the Saxgate affair, and I think it was the night Leslie Alexander resigned from Radio 2, if I remember. This is kind of like one of those I remember last week booze, isn't it? But it is important. Anyway, point being, so we decided, or I came up with this idea, because I wanted to output the show myself as editor, and it was also kind of a co-presentation thing to an extent, because obviously with a new presenter it's good to have somebody there who can broadcast as well, just to bounce ideas off, not that Matthew needed it. But I had this idea that we would look for someone to do, like with their full agreement, some kind of answer phone message to mock up the Jonathan Ross thing. And I think actually the point that we were making at the time, although we duly balanced it with calls, is what happened was obviously disgusting, but we kind of both held the view there was a bit of bandwagonism going on there. So terribly sad, really. Terribly, terribly sad. But so we did this, you know, because I knew Matthew knew Michael Winner quite well. So I don't suppose you could phone him up, could you? And ask him whether he'd, you know, do that with his full, you know, consent, you know, like a crank call to his answer phone. I said, no, phone him up and say I said to. Oh, God almighty. So I picked up the phone and I phoned him up on his in a London number. And it's this Michael. "Yes, it's Michael. What do you want?" And I said, "Matthew Norman has asked me to phone you up." "Oh, Matthew Norman. Oh, do you know Matthew?" "Yeah, he's a good friend of mine." "Then you're a good friend of mine." And he softened. This absolute roaring beast turned into a teddy bear. It was quite something to experience, actually. So anyway, he at this particular point, I told him what we wanted to do, and he said, and I've got to slightly bleep out a word in my own mind. He said, "Oh, yes, I know Matthew. Calm down, dear. I know Matthew very well. So you can say you've done anything. You know, you can say that you've bleeped my mother. You can say that you bleeped her upside down. You can say anything you like, and it's fine by me." Okay, brilliant. Well, Michael Winner actually didn't have an answer phone. He never did. So I had to phone him up and record a clip of Michael Winner. "Hello, calm down, dear. It's an answer phone message. Leave a message and I'll call you back." So we kind of recorded that for the sake of it. It was flag posted to the audience as being, for entertainment purposes. It wasn't supposed to sort of deceive anybody into thinking that we'd really sort of crank called him particularly. But the notion is that we'd phone him up and kind of more or less ad hoc, ad libbed rather, some very similar thing along the lines of the Saxgate actual call, like, you know, where you abort the call and you phone him back. And I think it kind of, your granddaughter in this particular case was, I got the waiter to spit in this food when you were doing your food review, because they were both, but Matthew and Michael Winner, both very well-known food critics. This is rambling on a bit now, but then the only other one was another night Matthew Norman was on, and again, I was outputting the show. And Michael Winner turned up. I'm not joking, he was booked for the 11 p.m. hour. And he turned up at the 10 hour. And we had sort of quite a big name guest due in then anyway. So he turns up, he comes on and says, "Right, I've come early, I've decided, but I'm going straight on air." Now, ordinarily with most guests, you wouldn't particularly have that. But I remember I was discussing it with Matthew at the time, and he said, no, we better put him on air. You know what he's like. He'll go. So what I'll say is he had his foibles. Many, many, many journalists have met his sharp side of his tongue. But to be fair, he cared deeply about his charity, which was the Memorial Fund. And to be fair, once he got over that initial, you know, rah, rah, rah lion phase that he did with everybody, I think he was generally sort of a relatively good-hearted person. And so, for better or for worse, with all our faults, and I know I have plenty, he's a man that will certainly be missed. And I certainly hope this droney audio booth does some justice to the life of the Death Wish director.